Now, how do you protect yourself from scams? How do you block people on social media, make complaints against platforms you're not happy with, and monitor your child's activity online? Well, Jess Kelly is News Talk's tech correspondent, presenter of the podcast Tech Talk, and has this advice. She spoke to Trasa Murphy.
Yeah, so it very much depends on the parameters that you have in place when it comes to security from the outset, and also the platform that you're using. One thing that's become apparent in recent years is that some platforms are better at giving users control than others. What I would say is, from the outset, and it's worth everyone doing it this morning, going to your social media platforms and just checking if your profile is open to anyone in terms of viewing. If you have your messages open, your DMs open for anyone to contact you, if you're not comfortable with that, or if you want to protect yourself from a preemptive point of view, it's worth making those changes within your settings. So if you go to your profile, go to settings, go to privacy, you can put barriers up that will protect you. If something does go awry, however, if you do want to block someone or report someone, it should simply be a case of clicking on their username. Very often on Instagram, for example, there's three little dots. On TikTok, there are three little dots. So again, it does vary by platform. But clicking on that, hitting report, it'll prompt you to suggest the nature of the report. So if, for example, somebody is engaging in a harmful way, if they're being inappropriate, or if you just want to stop them seeing your content, you'll be able to tick a box there, and that will then prevent them from being able to see your profile. And if you've opted to report, the platform will receive a notification. Now, this is the frustrating part for many people, myself included. I have reported people on certain platforms for certain behaviours, and you may get an automated reply saying that, X profile wasn't deemed to be in breach of our terms of use, so no action has been taken. That means that they're not going to take action in terms of your report, but if you have blocked them, they will remain blocked. So there's an element of control that you can take over there.
Now, scams. I was doing a little bit of prep yesterday for our chat and came across some stories from the United States where the typical scam is that someone will send a text to you. But now, apparently from the US, and I'm sure it's probably going on here as well, that AI, artificial intelligence, is being used to manipulate ordinary people's voices. So for an example, in one instance from the US, I read that a CEO was conned out of $233,000 when someone copied the voice of his parent company's boss, and an elderly woman nearly lost $28,000 thinking that her grandson was in trouble because she got a call and it sounded like her grandson, and unfortunately she sent on money to him.
Yeah, like the way to look at AI, and I think there's a lot of scary examples cited, not just around scams, but around a whole host of uses of AI. And the way we need to look at it is, AI is a tool. So you and I can use it as a productivity tool to get more done in our day. Scammers can use it in the exact same way. So it makes sense that they are utilizing it. What I would say, and I've spoken to members from the National Cybersecurity Center here in Ireland, and they say that the instances of the use of AI is pretty low, like things like of that nature, things like the phishing and the smishing scams, the text messages that we get, is still a massive proportion of the scams that are taking place in this country. We are seeing cloned emails, cloned phone numbers. I've had a number of instances in the last few weeks myself where I am getting missed calls from numbers, and when I call them back, the person has no recollection or no trace of calling me. That's a scammer essentially doubling up a number, hoping that I'll answer and they'll be able to get my credit card details.
Jess, how do they do it?
It's actually quite simple. There's a whole host of tools on the dark web, and the dark web used to be this very mysterious place on the internet. Now it's pretty accessible to anyone who wants to go find it. You can download software that can just clone numbers, and they're not coming after my number in particular. They're just going for numbers. They can geolocate them, so they want numbers that are mobile phones based in Ireland, and there's huge databases full of these numbers. It's the same way with the scams. So you may get a scam purporting to be from a bank or a utility company, and it's just a coincidence if it is your bank or utility company. They are sending out so many of these texts every single day. The probability is that it will land on the device of somebody with that bank or with that utility company. The advice here is to always err on the side of caution. never click on a link that comes in via a text or an email. If somebody, and if you're not 100% sure if it is your son or your daughter or your nephew who's calling looking for money, and you're not entirely sure if the whole thing just feels a bit suspicious, say, do you know what? I don't have my wallet. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Get off the phone. Don't give out any details over the phone. Even if it is a service provider calling you saying, do you know what, you're €50 overdue on your electricity bill, you need to pay it right now. Do not engage in the moment. Hang up, call the number on the official website and verify it that way. An actual service provider will not be annoyed at you if you take the extra few seconds to verify something. They'll actually be grateful, because what you're doing is saving headaches for yourself and for them down the line.
And I saw a very interesting and enlightening exchange on social media recently, whereby someone was the target of a scam, saying, mom, you know, I'm in trouble here. The person, mm-hmm. their son was abroad. I need $5,000 or whatever. And please send it to me at once. I'm in real trouble here. And the mother came back and said, yeah, I will, but I just need you to tell me what the name of our pet who died 20 years ago was. Mm-hmm. And it completely stumped the fraudster.
Yeah, like, again, so that scam, it's literally called the Hi Mom scam. And, you know, they'll say, oh, my phone is broken, but I need to pay whatever bill immediately. Can you send it to this bank account? Those things, they're working on emotional manipulation. And again, anytime I've interviewed any cybersecurity expert or anyone from the National Cybersecurity Center, the message that comes back to me is that the biggest weakness in our cybersecurity defense is people, because we want to help people. You hate to think of anybody being in need or, you know, in an awkward, difficult position. And so we tried to help. But that person was clearly very smart, asking to verify the name of the pet. Like, I've seen a few people do that, go down the rabbit hole with the scammers and try and catch them out. It's just not worth your time. Like, I'm of the view now that a majority of the texts that come into my phone, if it's not somebody that I already know, it's a scam, and I just don't engage. I think if you've got any doubt, work to verify it and then just step away entirely.
These fraudsters can also clone the websites of legitimate companies. Isn't that possible? So you think you're buying a product or a good or a goods or services from a legitimate company from their website, but that website is cloned. How do you avoid that? How do you check that the website isn't cloned?
Yeah, this is a scary one, and we actually spoke about it on my show a few months ago, because I very nearly fell victim to it. So Dun Stores, that company that we've all interacted with, I'm sure, over at some stage, I just put into Google Dun's, and I clicked on the first link that appeared. Now, as it happens, and looking back in hindsight, it was actually a sponsored link. And I went, filled my basket, and it was only when I looked at the URL, so at the top bar where it says www.whateverthewebsiteis.com or .ie, that I copped that it wasn't the official website that I'd been on before for Dun's. And so I caught it, but one of my listeners actually fell victim to it. And so she had filled her basket, gone through the entire transaction, and it was only when she didn't get a confirmation email from her order that she copped it. So you have to be, you the consumer, unfortunately, have to take the onus on yourself to just verify every URL that you're clicking on. Never put your credit card information or any personal information into a website that doesn't have the little padlock symbol up at the top beside where the URL is, because that indicates if it's a secure website or not. But again, we all have to be eyes wide open, and it is a lot of pressure. And I know a lot of people feel guilty or silly or foolish if they do fall for a scam. But unfortunately, there's not a whole lot else out there other than being eyes wide open the entire time.
How do you report harmful or defamatory content to a social media company? And I presume the response and the helpfulness, does it vary between platforms?
It definitely does. Now, the good thing is we have the Digital Services Act now, which came into force a few months ago, and that gives us, the consumer, extra protection, and it also puts the onus onto the social media platforms to adequately deal with complaints that arrive in. So, for example, if you are on X, formerly known as Twitter, and you see something, you have the options to click on the three little dots at the bottom of the post, and reporting it on the platform. So you can report content that you believe is in breach of X's terms of use. But if you don't feel like action has been taken, you can go in and you can report that content again, or in the first instance under the EU Digital Services Act. And that will force the company to take action. Now, what I would say is, if and when you are reporting content that is harmful or defamatory, in the first instance, take a screenshot of it. Also, copy and paste the URL and keep track of that. And I'll explain why in a second. So once you've taken the screenshot and you've copied the link, then go through the steps of reporting it either via the Terms of Service of the platform or the Digital Services Act. The reason why you need to have the URL and the screenshot is, if you want to escalate it, so say if somebody has said something about you on X and you report it, but the platform comes back with the automated response saying that no breach was found. You then report under the Digital Services Act, and again, they say no breach is found, but you want this content taken down. You want action taken because you believe it is defamatory and harmful to you. You now have the option of going to the Online Safety Commissioner, which is part of Commission Demand, formerly the BAI. And they will investigate, but you do need to have the original post. You also need to have the URL so that they can investigate it fully. So again, there's a bit of legwork on the user's behalf to report this content. But if it is something that is damaging to you, then it is definitely worth doing.
So much work to do, though, isn't it? On the part of the person who believes that something has been posted online that is offensive, that is possibly even criminal or defamatory. There's a lot of there's so much that the person themselves has to do.
Yeah, there is, but I do think, you know, there's no other option, because if you start trying to automate any of this, and to be fair to the social media companies, they do use AI in terms of content moderation a fair bit of the time, but things will fall through the cracks if it's fully automated. Also, if you think about the volume of content posted on social media every single day, things will fall through the cracks. So people tend to only care about defamatory or harmful content when it impacts them. And therefore, it kind of makes sense that the onus is on you. But the key thing here is to firstly ensure that you know what to do and where to go. And thirdly, that you also take the action. There's no point in tutting or rolling your eyes or feeling frustrated when you see something that shouldn't be online on the internet. There's enough bodies now that you can turn to, whether it is the platform themselves, the Data Protection Commission, if it involves your private information, or Commission Demand and the Office of the Online Safety Commissioner. There's enough supports in place. Also, you reference things there that potentially might be criminal. An Garda Síochána are there. They have a division that's dedicated to cybercrime. So your local Garda station is always worth a visit if something is, you know, in criminal nature, in threatening nature, or that you do feel poses a danger of some degree to you.
And finally, Jess, and thank you so much for this. It's been so informative. Putting limits or setting limits on a child's phone or iPad or whatever screen they use to access the internet.
Yeah, it's something that comes up quite a bit. And I suppose it depends on the age of the child, right? Because we all know very tech-savvy teenagers who probably know more about this stuff than we do. But what I always recommend is a service called Google Family Link. It's completely free. And basically, you as the parent set up the account. Then you tie your child's device to your account. So the child can still use the device, they can still do anything that they want, but you the parent have eyes on the apps that they have downloaded. You can also set screen time limits. You can knock off certain apps if you don't want them on Snapchat or TikTok. You can turn that off. It just gives you an element of control Also, when you're setting up a device, so if your child is getting their first ever device, it's worth setting it up in parental mode. A lot of devices now will ask the question when you're setting up a phone or a tablet if this is for you or if it's for a child. And if you select that it's for a child, they will put certain safety parameters in place. So again, things have greatly improved in terms of the controls that are in place for parents to protect their children. But what I would say, the helicopter parenting, it's not great in many instances, but it is when it comes to the online world.
And using that device, can a parent see if somebody's trying to interact with your child?
No, because a lot of the services that children would use would be end-to-end encrypted, which means that it's only going to one device from another device, which is also encrypted in many instances. But, you know, I do a lot of work with the ISPCC, and there's a brilliant safety hub on their website. If you go to ispcc.ie and click into the safety hub, you'll see some of the tips and tricks and videos. One of the things that's recommended is that, you know, once a week you do a face up with your devices. So everyone in the house just puts their device on the kitchen table and the parent can go in, have a look around and see what's being, you know, who's interacting with your child and so on. Instagram have done great work in the last little while in terms of improving the safety of its younger users. So for example, you can tie your Instagram account to your child's Instagram account and you will get a notification if somebody tries to talk to your child or add your child. But, you know, it does come down to that old school thing of what happened when I used to come home from school, sitting down at the kitchen table. My mum would ask me, what did I do for the day? Who was I playing with in the yard? The same kind of conversations now need to happen, but in relation to the digital world.